Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And we're technically past October and that spate of spooky episodes that comes along with it, but the subject of this episode, Johann Conrad Dippel, could really fit right in with that batch. And honestly, I have to confess here, he probably would have been with that batch if this book that I had ordered for $2.59 had come in time.
A little peek into our world.
I know, we're always... I don't want to say complaining. We're always telling people, I guess, especially people who write in about books, that we don't really have a research budget.
Yeah, I'm on the waiting list for this book at the library, waiting for this cheap book to come from Amazon, whatever it is.
Yeah, so we're kind of at the mercy of what's available.
Of time, just like everyone else.
Of time, yeah. So if we take a while to do your request, sometimes this is why. We're just waiting to be moved up on the waiting list, but... Back to our story. Dippel's story really straddles a line between spooky and science. And I think that's why it makes a good non-Halloween episode, too. I mean, we've really come to love these science episodes that we've done. And this really fits in with that.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. They're popular with listeners. And I don't know, they're just a little outside of our normal repertoire, almost. But
yeah.
This guy... really combines a lot more than your typical scientific pursuit.
He does. In his life's work, we find a mix of theology, science, alchemy, and medicine. And if that's not interesting enough, there are also the rumors that are involved in this tale, rumors of mysterious experiments involving the reanimation of we don't know what, something, maybe people, maybe animals, and also rumors of body snatching. So if you didn't already guess it from that description, there's a link here, or maybe just the supposition of a link to Dr. Frankenstein, the character from Mary Shelley's famous novel. And that's probably the main reason that Dippel is a frequent request from our listeners. Maybe a lot of them believe that he was the inspiration for that character.
And of course, if this is starting to sound kind of familiar, we already did an episode last year called Who is the Real Frankenstein? And it was about Giovanni Aldini. But the character of Frankenstein is kind of like the one of Indiana Jones. There are several different historical figures that people believe could have been possible inspirations. And we named a few of them in that Who was the Real Frankenstein podcast. Maybe one reason why we didn't explore that possibility more, though, is because there are some legit sounding reasons cited as to why Dipple couldn't have been the Frankenstein inspiration, which we're, of course, going to mention later on.
But the potential Frankenstein connection, while it may have been the reason we heard about Dipple, that's not the only reason that we became interested in learning more about him. He was also just this rascally, controversial figure, and you know how we love those. He also created a concoction that seems fit for some sci-fi horror story, but according to an article in Medical History by E.E. Ainslie and W.A. Campbell, was really included in pharmaceutical books as a sort of universal medicine until the early 19th century. And this concoction was called Dipple's Oil, and Dipple thought it to be the elixir of life.
Okay, so one of the reasons why it's so hard to know whether Dipple truly could have been the inspiration for Frankenstein is that a lot of the details of his life are pretty sketchy. According to Radu Florescu in his book In Search of Frankenstein, this is partly because a lot of primary sources related to Dipple's life, including his doctoral dissertation, were destroyed during the Allied bombings of Darmstadt and Gießen, which is where he studied. So all these papers about his life are no longer with us, unfortunately.
Florescu's own biographical sketch of Dipple is one that we refer to a lot, and he put it together through studying more than 70 works which Dipple composed, including one that contained his autobiography, as well as Dipple biographies by other writers, including Carl Voss. So one thing that most accounts of Dipple's life really agree on is how it began. He was born August 10th, 1673 at, and this is probably one of the biggest reasons that people make the Mary Shelley Frankenstein connection. It's because he was born at a place called Frankenstein Castle, about a mile south of Darmstadt.
So I'd say that's a pretty big connection. Mm-hmm. So today this castle is basically a ruin that overlooks the Odenwald, but it was once the home of the Barons Frankenstein.
Or Frankenstein, maybe more accurate.
Yeah, and they were a German feudal family, but they had vacated the place by the time Dipple was born, having sold the place in 1662.
By the time Dipple was born, the castle, however, had become a hospital for people who had been injured in the war with France. And his parents, Anna Eleonora Munchmeyer and a Lutheran minister named Johann Philipp Dipple, were both refugees there. According to that medical history article we mentioned, Dipple's father wanted him to become a Lutheran minister, too. He would have been the fifth generation in his family to do so. But Florescu notes that Dipple was always kind of a strange kid. For one thing, he was kind of a loner. The other kids gave him the nickname the Owl for his tendencies to keep to himself and also to read by candlelight in one of the castle towers at night, which sounds pretty brave for a young kid. He was also considered kind of odd for the way he regarded himself. He was really smart, and that seems pretty evident by pretty much all accounts. Ainslie and Campbell's article says that at Dipple's secondary school, Darmstadt Gymnasium, his name was first on the roll of distinguished old boys. But Florescu says that Dipple considered himself, quote, a superior individual animated by a, quote, higher spirit who could figure out the mysteries of the universe. So he basically thought that his brilliance was limitless.
Something that makes sense of his later achievements in life.
Yeah, and something that shows us why maybe he wouldn't have been content with following his father's footsteps as far as profession is concerned.
Exactly. So Dipple enrolled at the University of Gießen in 1691. He was about 17 years old, and he was planning on studying theology still. He registered under a different name, though, from Dipple.
He registered with the name Frankensteiner, which was another reason that the name has kind of stuck with him throughout the years. And he earned a reputation at school for being extremely intelligent, but also for being really vocal about debating theological and scientific points with his professors. He graduated in 3 years and apparently really shocked some people with his dissertation, which was entitled On Nothing. And as such was considered to be a confession of skepticism.
Sounds like a classic college kid move, though, doesn't it? You write your dissertation, quote, on nothing.
In a way, yes.
It wasn't too long after that that Dippel adopted the Lutheran Pietist point of view. And at that time, the Lutheran Church was divided into Orthodox and Pietist contingents. And the Orthodox camp conformed to the Lutheran creeds and liturgy. And the Pietists basically believed that the, quote, good life was more important than sticking to a creed. So if that separation makes sense to you guys. According to Ainsley and Campbell's article, this switcheroo may not have been that big of a surprise either, since Dippel, quote, began to express doubts about the catechism at age 9.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But Florescu asserts that Dipple's tendency to change his stance seems to have had more to do with him wanting to win a debate than any sort of real desire to find a fundamental truth, which I think is sort of interesting. It's like it was more about the argument itself than what he was arguing. Regardless of this wavering stance, though, he wrote extensively on theology, and those works puzzled a lot of people because he did kind of go back and forth. Ainslie and Campbell cite one professor who was really confused by Dipple's theological work. He said, quote, "A man must have the gift of divination to be able to deduce a regular and consistent system of doctrine from the various productions of this incoherent and unintelligible writer, who was a chemist into the bargain, and whose brain seems to have been heated to a high degree of fermentation by the fire of the laboratory."
I don't know about you, Dibblina, but this makes the editor in me just squirm.
Oh, I know.
I'm imagining having to edit this guy. But if you look up works about Dipple now, a lot of what's out there focuses on his theological career. But even after earning a degree in theology, he didn't really stick to what he seemed to know best, to lecturing about just theology. He was somebody who, for whatever reason, had a lot of confidence in lecturing about things that he knew very little, if anything, about. After graduating, he didn't get a teaching position at the University of Gießen, maybe because he had sort of rubbed folks the wrong way with all of that switcheroo debating he did. So he moved on to the Imperial University of Strasbourg in 1694, where, according to Bob Curran's book, Man-Made Monsters, he started lecturing for a short time on alchemy and chiromancy, which is fortune-telling, until his license to teach there was revoked. That already gives you a pretty good sense of this guy's diversity. If he's not just talking about theology, he's talking about fortune-telling.
Yeah, and at this point, I mean, and alchemy, too, and at this point, he hadn't really even studied alchemy that much, and you kind of indicated that when you said that he was always lecturing about things that he really didn't know that much about. He just sort of felt confident enough that he could teach other people, even though he didn't have expertise in these areas himself. But Florescu also notes that Dipple didn't necessarily need to find an official classroom to teach these things. While in Strasbourg, he became known for lecturing in all kinds of spots, salons, taverns, churches, or even just lecturing out in the street. And he would lecture on all kinds of things, too, though astrology and chiromancy were probably the most popular. According to Ainslie and Campbell's article, Dipple also practiced palmistry during this time.
I don't know. To me, an open-air lecture on palmistry sounds like it would be pretty entertaining.
I would go to that,
You'd be going to get lunch, and you'd see this guy lecturing, and you'd stop for a little while. But we're making him out to sound like kind of a really weird guy who maybe nobody was paying much attention to, but some students really looked up to him. But
yeah, I mean, remember, he was brilliant.
He was, and he captivated people. But Florescu also points out that chronicles from the time allude to some kind of, quote, scandalous behavior on Dipple's part. And after living where he was for a couple years, he was forced to flee. And exactly why he had to do that is a bit unclear. Florescu says that he was implicated in some body snatching incidents in a local cemetery. Ainslie and Campbell say that it's because Dipple killed an opponent in a duel. So,
very different explanations
Both good reasons to get out of town.
Regardless of why he had to leave, Dipple did have to go and lay low for a little while. According to Florescu, he returned home for this period, and home at that time was near Frankenstein Castle with his parents. So this is about the time when Dipple began to really seriously study and practice alchemy. And he got into it when a Lutheran minister from Gießen gave him a couple of books on alchemy. And these books included Raymond Lully's Experiments and Guillaume Postel's Veil Raised on the Mysteries of the Beginning of the World. He basically pushed these books on Dipple because he supposedly believed that Dipple would be able to understand them better than anyone else. So, again, kind of a nod to his supposed intellect.
His brilliance. Mm-hmm. And after reading them, Dipple apparently decided that the whole make and gold thing that everybody was so interested in at the time really didn't sound that tough after all. I mean, you guys should go listen to our episode from last October on alchemy if you want to see really how much people were into this.
Right.
But he decided he wanted to give it a shot, and he was so confident that he would succeed that he bought an estate completely on credit to set up his lab there. It cost 50,000 guilders, but of course he didn't anticipate paying these loans back would be a problem, because of course he would be able to make gold and pay in that. So in about 1700 or 1701, sometime in there, he claimed that he had succeeded in finding the secret formula for gold, but the crucible containing that broke into the fire and was tragically lost. And according to legend, alchemists weren't supposed to use the gold that they created for personal gain. So, you know, this idea of buying a place on a credit and then you'd pay it all back with the gold you could make, not legit for real alchemists to be planning on doing that. So maybe it was a little bit of bad luck.
Yeah, a little curse-like situation going on there. But there are differing accounts of what happened with Dipple after this. According to that medical history article that we were talking about, Dipple had to flee again to escape angry creditors. Florescu, however, says that he tried unsuccessfully to recreate this gold formula that he'd lost for 3 years after that, and then started wandering. I have to wonder, okay, if you'd made the gold formula, didn't he write it down?
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Jean, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, and why it would take, what is it, it's longer. It takes longer to try to recreate it, doesn't it, than when he made it the first time? It sounds like he was just messing around with stuff the whole time.
Yeah, a pinch of this, a little of that, a little Philosopher's Stone. Either way, Dippel began to wander through other parts of Germany and through foreign lands, too. For a while, he settled in Berlin, which was at the time the capital of the Kingdom of Prussia. And while there, he was under the protection of Count August von Wittgenstein, who I think we've mentioned the Wittgenstein family in other episodes.
They pop up from time to time.
The Count convinced King Frederick I to set Dippel up with a mansion and a nice laboratory, and it's there that he started experiments of a very different nature. He set out to discover an elixir that would cure a variety of conditions, kind of like a universal medicine. So it sounds like something that we would all kind of want, right? Something to cure whatever ails you. Only listen to how he created it.
So in order to create this wonder product of his, he started experimenting with distilling animal parts, namely blood, first, and then bones, which he would boil to extract the fatty matter. And according to Florescu, quote, the product was conducted through iron condensing tubes and fed into receivers where the crude bone oil collected. That doesn't sound very good.
That product, according to Ainsley and Campbell, smelled and tasted pretty gross, as you would imagine, but it was used in medical practice to cure a number of ailments, and for a while it had a good reputation as a medicine until the end of the 18th century. It was named Dippel's oil or Dippel's animal oil, and it was said to stimulate the nervous system if you took it internally, but I think people used to rub it on the outside of their bodies
as
well.
They did not want to consume it necessarily.
I don't know if they didn't want to, but you didn't necessarily have to. I guess it depended on what you were trying to treat. Mm-hmm. I think I read that you could use it to treat spasms, maybe rub it on.
It's a miracle product. I mean, I guess it works for just about anything. Although Dippel's animal oil does not make it sound appealing either.
It doesn't. Maybe just Dippel's oil would have been a better name. And, I've seen it both ways. I've seen it as Dippel's oil and Dippel's animal oil, but I think I would choose to partake of the Dippel's oil before the animal oil for sure. But through this work in boiling animal parts, Florescu also points out that Dippel made a very different kind of discovery. By boiling animal parts and mixing in iron and some various other ingredients, he apparently ended up with a chemical called potassium ferrocyanide. And when that chemical was mixed with air, it became this brilliant blue color that became known as Prussian blue or Berlin blue. For some reason, that discovery wasn't made public until about 1724, but that blue dye was widely used by artists.
Yeah, you'll still see paint colors today. It's a color still, Prussian blue.
Right. And just a side note here, since we've done some poison podcasts recently, another German chemist took Dippel's chemical and diluted it with sulfuric acid, which created hydrocyanic or prussic acid, which Florescu calls one of the most potent poisons.
So, all of this here, we have this miracle drug, and you'd think that Dippel's oil and Prussian blue, the color, the paint, the pigment, would have been enough to earn Dippel some measure of wealth and respect, but he kept getting implicated in various scandals. Florescu asserts that this was a result of other scientists and alchemists being jealous of him and thus making him the subject of their intrigue, but regardless of the reason, Dippel had to stay on the move pretty much most of his life, according, again, to Florescu, another similarity to Shelley's Frankenstein, who, as you remember from the book, is pretty much always on the move. Although that's partly because there's a monster involved.
That's true. He had motivation.
he had good reason to to keep going. But finally, Dippel headed to Holland after Berlin, where he studied medicine in Leiden and earned his degree by 1711 or so. And he was said by some to be a pretty good physician. And according to Ainsley and Campbell, he even attempted to set up a medical practice outside of Amsterdam, but again had to flee, this time to Denmark in 1714. And again, the reason why he had to get out of town and so fast seems to be unknown.
Although Florescu does point out that after earning his medical degree, Dippel was doing experiments with animals, taking them apart to just try to find out how it all fit together. And apparently at least one of Dippel's biographers suggests that he was trying to understand the process that, quote, engenders life itself, another similarity to Shelley's character, if it is true.
Well, and this reminded me a little bit, too, of the blood work episode, mm-hmm. trying to find the root of the soul. I mean, that's pretty similar to trying to find the process that engenders life itself. These experiments going around are going on kind of at the same time to find what seems like unfindable things.
So maybe these crazy experiments that Dippel was doing had something to do with his flight. But after going to Denmark, Dippel again got caught up in a series of political intrigues that resulted in him getting thrown into prison for 7 years on the Danish island of Bornholm. He was sentenced to life, but was released at the request of the Queen of Denmark in 1726, who wanted him to be her physician. So that shows that he must have had a pretty good medical reputation at the time.
I'd say, if you're thinking, get this prisoner out of jail,
I need him to be my doctor.
And I'm the Queen of Denmark.
Right.
A year later, though, he ended up moving to Sweden, where he worked as a physician in the court of the Swedish king. So really a dramatic rise in fortunes for him. He continued to encounter controversy there, though, as well, and eventually returned home to Germany in 1729 after being gone for some 25 years.
Yeah, and what I've read about him, Florescu in his book talks a lot about how Dippel was sort of drawn to home his whole life. He sort of kept in touch with his family, his siblings there, and he wanted to come home. So it makes you question even more these things that made him move from place to place,
well,
what it was.
And drawn to one place in particular.
Yeah, he returned to his family home near Castle Frankenstein, the place where he was born. And Florescu says that it's there at home that Dippel started working on some kind of, quote, grand design. And citing a document that most scholars ignore, this author says that Dippel did claim to finally have achieved something of this sort, some sort of chemical secret. And then he apparently offered it to the local landowner near his family home in exchange for ownership of Castle Frankenstein and its domain. So he's sort of focused on this place where he was born.
Getting the castle.
He wanted it.
In exchange for a grand design. The deal didn't work, though.
No, it fell through. And it's still not clear what the secret that he was offering for the castle was. But Florescu thinks it has something to do with a mysterious pamphlet that Dippel had printed in 1733, a year after the deal fell through. In it, he claimed that he discovered a formula for prolonging his own life until 1801, at which point he would have been 135 years old. Apparently, this came at a time when his enemies were spreading rumors that he was going to die, so maybe he sort of came up with this to counter that.
Unfortunately, though, for Dippel, he ended up dying just a year after making that prophecy, on April 24th, 1734. He was found in the palace of his old friend, the Count von Wittgenstein, where he had a laboratory. And Dippel's body was cold and rigid when it was found, but he was also foaming at the mouth, and the entire right side of his face was blue. And the medical history article that we've mentioned earlier says that the cause of death was probably a stroke, but of course, especially for a guy like this, people suggested that it could have also been poison. Still, other people, and this has got to be the best option on the table, think that he'd been killed by the devil for not keeping some sort of contract.
And that last theory is definitely fitting for a spooky tale like Shelley's, but there are several reasons why people think that Dippel probably wasn't actually the inspiration for Frankenstein. For one thing, many of the traits that people attribute to him may actually post-date Mary Shelley's novel. So these were things that were sort of retroactively put onto Dippel, maybe even after the movies were made. there's also some doubt about how much Shelley could have known about Dipple's life. She definitely traveled in the area where Castle Frankenstein is, but who knows if she actually heard about his story. And finally, of course, we just don't really know that much about Dipple's life.
Of course, Shelley might not have necessarily been at the same disadvantage that modern scholars are, since she would have been long before the World War II bombings in the places where all his records were.
That's true. But another thing I think of here is that even if she had been interested in the things he was doing and wanted to find out more about him, as you mentioned earlier, I think there were a lot of people who were doing these sorts of experiments at the time.
A popular pastime.
Right. So she could have just been inspired by that fact rather than Dipple's specific story. But it's interesting to speculate about, and I'm glad to know a little bit more about him. So, you know, good request from listeners here.
Yeah.
Even though we had to go to some lengths to find out more about him.
Well, I am guessing from the reception of the spooky episodes this October, people won't mind too much that this one is coming out in November. Keep the spookiness rolling, you know?
Yeah, and I think to that end, we have some spooky listener mail to share, too. So we have a letter here from listener Kristen, and she says, I was delighted to see your episode on the Salem witch trials and listen to it immediately. My interest in the topic stems from living in Salem for about 6 years because my husband is a Salem native. We now return regularly to visit my in-laws. Actually, we were just there over the past weekend, and yes, the Halloween spectacle was in full swing. Anyway, I want to let you know that if you or your listeners visit Salem, there are more historical attractions related to the trials. The Peabody Essex Museum, a major art and history museum, has within its holdings documents from the trials and artifacts that were the personal effects of those involved. These are at the Phillips Library and were previously on display, though currently the library is closed to the public for renovations. However, currently open, and I know because I was just there, is a display in Old Town Hall that has some historical information regarding the trials. There are some gems that the Salemites and former Salemites are proud to show to visitors, and ones that sadly get bypassed by visitors without an insider connection. Oh, and unless you want a spectacle, don't visit in October. It is way too crazy for a more serious visit. And there are many additional historic sites to visit relating maritime history, architecture, and literary history. So thanks for those travel tips, Kristen.
That's what they told me when I visited the Salem Visitor Center.
Oh, yeah?
Check out our maritime attraction.
It's good to know. And then we have a fun note from listener Tristan, who says, Tristan here from the Shields Brothers. We are a rock band, and we were on The Voice on NBC on Team CeeLo. So a few months back, we were listening to your Jack the Ripper podcast, and you inspired us to write a song about him. It's called Saucy Jack. So, and he sent us a little YouTube link to it. Maybe
Very
we should
cool.
put that up.
And he's on Team CeeLo. Atlanta, yeah. Represent.
There you go. So if you have any podcast inspiration stories or any travel tips like listener Kristen that you want to share with us, we welcome those. Send them our way at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We're also on Twitter at Mist in History, and we're on Facebook.
Or other Frankensteins. I mean, we've done two now, so I see a series in the works. You never know.
There are some other Frankensteins that we could do if we can find the books.
The ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a good article on Frankenstein?
We do. Well, we have one on Frankenstein's monster. I think Robert Lamb wrote
Perfect.
It. It's an article called How Frankenstein's Monster Works. You can find it by visiting our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.